Welcome to the Thank You Rob podcast. Not down by the beach.
Boy, he.
That's, I've been working on my Jamaican accent.
Oh. Did you see the Volkswagen ad and you finally caught some inspiration?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Turn that frown upside down, ma. Yeah.
That's a good positive ad. It is. Positivity.
I saw the ad about it and, like, all the controversy saying it was racist. I really don't see what was racist about it.
Right.
It's just people trying to make a mountain out of a molehill.
Right, exactly.
Seems interesting, but.
Well, welcome to the Thank You Rob podcast, episode number 5, officially.
Ooh.
I'm here with Egypto Knuckles.
Ooh, yeah.
Of the Background Noise Crew.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. What's cracking? Yeah. What's cracking?
Thank you, Rob podcast, unofficially sponsored by the Pearson Salted Nut Roll.
Oh, wait. We got to say this together in unison.
Don't be a butthole. Eat a Pearson Salted Nut Roll.
Whoops.
You'll get it.
Soon enough, I'll get it.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yes.
That's great.
So how you doing, man?
I'm chilling, dog. Yeah. I'm just getting ready for the Common Labor Release Party, which is happening this Saturday. So
nice. And, hey, well-timed.
Oh,
well
yeah.
Well-timed.
It was a good time.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good time. And then also I was at the Big Jess show.
I missed it.
Oh, man.
I really regret that I missed that.
I can tell you why you regret you missed that in a second, but I'm sure we'll get to that.
We will. And, okay, so the last episode I had Big Jess on the show.
Yes, you did.
And we talked about Notorious B.I.G., Ready to Die, the album.
Biggie Smalls.
Biggie.
Bed-Stuy, Do or Die.
What do you know about that album? I know you're a guru of many hip-hop albums.
If I'm not mistaken, the album came out in 94, 95-ish. Mimics heavily from Nas's Illmatic cover, if I'm not mistaken, and puts Biggie as an infant. If I'm also not mistaken, a lot of people said it's the East Coast version of The Chronic.
Wow.
I remember a lot of critics saying that it was pretty much the East Coast version of The Chronic.
Right.
And even Biggie and Puffy were talking to a great length in interviews about how they wanted to really capture what Dre did, what The Chronic did for the West Coast, they wanted to do with the East Coast.
I think they did a great job.
It's a great album. I mean, it still stands the true legacy of Biggie's time.
Right.
Although I will say a little bit of controversy, I really don't think Big is the greatest of all time.
I agree.
I would say two albums is too short of a legacy to judge.
Yeah.
Pac has a little bit more legacy, but still, it's the posthumous legacy that really tarnishes it, in my view.
Who is your number one?
Without a doubt, it's Rakim.
Rakim.
Dead or alive.
All right. All right.
I mean, Rakim is pretty much the reason why 99% of the MCs out here are birthed.
Right.
Without any contention.
You know, we got to say, we're here. People probably hear this background noise going on. Background noise.
Fun intended.
But we're recording actually here live at Yaffa tonight.
Yes, sir.
Yaffa is a hookah bar / restaurant now.
Yes, sir.
You come here all the time, don't you?
I'm pretty much. This is pretty much
you have
my
steak
most
ownership.
Thankfully, I do not.
Thankfully,
but actually, this is pretty much my most tavern. So. As you could hear a little bit of chatter in the background,
right,
it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it gives a character. It's going to give this episode a lot of character.
A lot of character.
Yeah.
And that's what this show needs, is a lot of character.
Right, I need all the help I can get.
Now, I must clear something up here, because last time you talked to my friend Johnny Question Mark.
Yes.
And you guys talked about the Kendrick Lamar album.
Right.
I'm sorry, I'm going to swear up and down. I won't say the album is classic. I think for an album to be classic, it really needs to stand the test of time as a classic album.
Right.
But as far as albums last year in hip-hop are concerned, I really think Kendrick had it.
You think so?
It is a damn near flawless record.
Now, it's interesting to get your viewpoint on that because you listen to a lot of fucking music.
Way too much.
A lot. Every Tuesday you go out and you buy. Every Tuesday, would you say?
Yes.
How much? What's your average? How many albums do you buy?
Fuck. Oh, God. I will say this. The last trip I made to the record store, I went there, and what happened was a hip-hop DJ recently sold off all his vinyl. And he had some rare, rare finds. I mean, some really rare finds. I think I left with a grocery bag full of singles that I was looking for ages. And I think I spent damn near $170.
Damn.
On used shit. on actual used shit.
That equates to a lot of albums, too.
That is a lot of albums.
Average about, what, $5 or less an album, would you say?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah? Nice. Yeah. That's got to add to the collection.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely get rid of shit in the collection, too, which is hilariously enough. You know, Beyonce performed yesterday at the Super Bowl. Sadly, I sold back my copy of Beyonce Dangerously in Love and Destiny's Child Survivor on vinyl. The only reason why I sold them back, really, is because I have all the 12s with the instrumentals. So I was like, not really a need for the album.
Right, right.
You know,
What'd you think of her performance there?
She was fucking stellar.
Yeah.
I'm not going to even lie.
She was, you know, here's the thing about Beyonce is, I'm not a big fan or anything. I recognize she makes good pop music, you know.
Absolutely.
She's a beautiful woman. But last night, she was sexy.
Yes.
She was sexy.
Yes.
Yeah. Alicia Keys killed the national anthem.
Yes, she did.
That was awesome.
Yes, she did.
That was awesome. I was very
proud
of my girl. It's my girl.
That's your girl, yo. Yeah. You swear by Alicia Keys. I remember when we had that discussion.
Yeah. Ironically, my wife, we just celebrated our 6-year wedding anniversary the other day.
Applause in order.
Thank you. No, please.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. Oh,
stop. Yeah. Cut it out. Yeah, I just pulled the Uncle Joey there for those
you
at
did,
home
yep.
who couldn't view that.
Yes.
It was magical.
We'll post a how-to on how to do that online.
Oh, yeah.
But she bought me songs. What's it? Songs in A minor?
Oh, yeah. The songs in A minor. The deluxe edition,
the
right?
The deluxe edition on vinyl.
I did see that.
Yes, that was very, very nice of her.
Oh, wow. That's pretty stellar right there.
That's how you know she loves you.
Yes.
When she buys you Alicia Keys albums on vinyl.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For me, it's, you know, the hilarious part is, like, in my vinyl travails when we talked about the Two Live Crew, I did come across a rare 12-inch that I did drop $10 on, and it was the We Want Some Pussy 12-inch.
Nice.
So, yes, I am the owner of it.
Do you own the fuck shop?
I do not own the
Welcome
fuck shop.
Welcome to the fuck shop.
Nice.
But our topic of discussion today is Rage Against the Machine.
Woo!
Yeah.
Ow!
Very influential, very original. Many say originated that rap rock sound.
They brought
it to the forefront.
You could make the case for it. I would argue to. I mean, like me and my friend Mike Lover from the Beatbox have had some arguments regarding that, and he has said that Downset actually developed the rap rock sound, if I'm not mistaken.
Downset?
Yeah, they kind of developed, like, the way for... But I would say that on a mainstream platform, Rage did it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
Well, I'm going to tell you where I was at in my life when I first heard their self-titled debut.
Yes.
I, myself, being a very hip-hop...
oriented kind of guy.
Yeah, you know, I really didn't listen to much of anything else.
Yes, sir.
And this came out in 92?
92,
93, 91?
Say about 93, if I'm
93.
Not mistaken.
Let's go with 93. And, you know, a lot of buddies of mine always listen to... One guy specifically listened to Pantera. Really a metal kind of guy.
Okay, I love Pantera.
Right.
Just for the record.
Yeah, it's good to have friends like that because they open up doors to music you've never heard before. You know, that you normally wouldn't listen to.
Absolutely.
It's not that I wouldn't ever hear Pantera or Rage because I was on the radio.
Absolutely.
But, so when we're driving in his car, it was this music.
Yes.
And he had this album, and it was like, I just, you know, you can't not listen to it when you're in a car and it's turned all the way up.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And
it's
so powerful, and it's got that hip-hop feel. It's with Zach De La Roca.
Yes, Zach De La Roca.
You know, it's...
I'd
never heard anything
Al Roca.
Like it. never heard anything like it before. You know, it was you can't help but feel it, you know.
You know that a lot of people say that you can tell the true test of time on a record by if you can describe the exact moment where you were when you first heard it.
Well, I can't describe that, but it was definitely in this guy's red Cutlass.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that kind of ballparks it. I got a shitty memory. So.
Wow. Yeah.
That's about as accurate as I could get. I couldn't tell you the
actual year was 92, actually.
Okay,
so
92, right.
It was November 92, so we could classify it.
Yeah.
But I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, the first time I heard Rage Against the Machine, again, I was also very, very hip-hop oriented. The first time that I heard about Rage Against the Machine was around Evil Empire time. So that was around the time, if I'm not mistaken, when it was 96, I want to say. And I found out, like, just through the Rolling Stone cover, it was the cover of Zach De La Roca and RZA on the cover of Rolling Stone.
Right.
And how they were touring together, and they were going to fuck shit up.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to fucking see the Wu-Tang Clan and Rage Against the Machine at the Roy Wilkins.
Right.
But it ended up being that just Rage could make the trip.
Right.
The
yep.
Wu couldn't make the trip.
And I went to that show.
Oh, my God.
And a funny thing there was, again, I was huge on Wu-Tang, and I liked Rage just because of friends, right? And I was like, oh, fuck yeah, I finally get to see Wu-Tang.
Yeah.
You know, I was so jazzed to see him.
Oh,
and then I, you know, this was days before everyone had the internet, so it was like I think MTV might have announced it or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
MTV News. Yeah. And I was just so bummed out. I was like, I don't even want to go to the show. I was so pissed. But my friends made me go. They're like, just go. And so Rage was
there. You need Freds like that.
Yes,
you
exactly.
You need Freds.
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
That.
And it was just like, man, so fucking cool, man. I was very pleased that I went.
Fuck yeah. Dude.
But and you know, it was friends like that. We went to like Ozfest and
yeah.
You know, I saw Pantera probably three or four times
yeah.
And
man.
Yeah.
God.
Open doors, open your eyes to other things.
Oh yeah. I mean like I know that I was pretty much a hip hop fiend until about that year. Like until about that year I was pretty much like you couldn't dead set me on anything else. It was pretty much hip hop. And hip hop, I mean, it's still the first love. Don't
right.
get me wrong.
Yeah, same here.
But I still listen to a lot of indie rock shit. I listen to world shit. I listen to funk shit, jazz shit. I mean, I'm just like you, actually. I've been revisiting a lot of the old shit recently.
Yeah.
Like, I think just the other day in the car, what the fuck was I listening to? I was listening to Miles Davis's Bitches Brew for the second time around, for like my 33rd time around.
Wow.
And like, a friend of mine had bought it for me as a birthday gift from Radio K. Because at that time, like, you know, we had Cheapo on campus.
Okay.
You know, it was right in the place of the Pagoda. It was right next door to the McDonald's. So he went, he bought me Bitches Brew used, and I was like not knowing what to expect. And as soon as I put the first disc on and heard the first note, my world changed. I was like, man, what the fuck am I doing?
Right.
You
That's
know?
One I got. I've never really dug into Miles Davis's music yet.
Let's put it this way. Miles Davis is like Bob Dylan in a certain sense, in the sense that once you listen to one album, you're going to find out that all of them resonate with you the same exact fucking way.
Right.
And they're all going to hit you in a different way, and it's really, really, it's really, really enamoring to hear.
Right.
It's like, it's great.
Well, did you know that if peeing your pants is cool, consider me Miles Davis?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, I was aware.
I just wanted to make sure you knew.
Okay. I don't know if other people may have an issue with that, but I don't have it.
Okay, good.
That's all good. That's okay.
So of this album, the debut album, rather, what? So you heard Evil Empire, then you worked your way back to this one?
Then I worked my way back, yeah.
Right.
I think what happened was, like, I was working a directory assistance job at the time. In 96, I was working at Blockbuster Video. That's it.
Nice.
So I went to Best Buy when Cop Rage Against the Machine's first album.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I was really prepared for what the first album was going to be like. And then, like, I just sat one night. I was bored. I had listened to Wu-Tang Forever for, like, the third time in my disc Walkman.
Yeah.
I think it was, like, I turned the lights out in my room and I just put the album on blast. And my world was changed forever after
right.
that. Like, I heard Killing in the Name, and I was like wanting to fuck shit up when Zach told me, fuck you, I won't do what you tell
me. Yeah.
Like, right then
it's
and
powerful,
there.
Powerful, man.
I was like,
it is powerful
yeah.
music.
I was like, this is exactly the kind of bust your shit authority that I'm looking for.
Right. And, you know, the beauty of it is like, it's really good music, regardless of the lyrics, which are very powerful, very political. It's... Like, even to this day, I still listen to this album and Evil Empire. I've never really gotten into Battle of Los Angeles. I really haven't even listened to it much.
Oh, man, that's such a fucking good record.
Yeah.
Such a good record.
I got to get into that one. But it's a good workout album, too. It's, like, very energetic.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's politically charged. An interesting fact about this album is the only additional musicians on this album are Jane's Addiction drummer, which I didn't even know that. But actually, on the track listing, the only featured singer is Maynard Keenan from Tool.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I'd kind of perused through the credits and read that, and I was surprised. I was like, whoa, shit. And, like, a friend of mine was into Tool's Anima, which was that little, like, first 3D kind of cover album.
I remember that.
Oh, man. I saw that cover, and I was just batshit insane. I was like, what the fuck is this cover? This cover is fucking wild. You know?
Was your mind playing tricks on you, too?
Like the Ghetto Boys. Absolutely. 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 But, like, I think I remember when I first saw the cover for it, and I was, and it made me want to delve deeper. It was crazy. Like, I wanted to delve deeper into what the cover was about.
Right.
And then I had read the actual story about it.
Yep, yep. And, as I did, too.
And I was just like, yo, that's some real shit.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Can you believe that
so,
shit?
So the story is it's a Buddhist monk who is...
Who's protesting. The Chinese oppression on those folks,
right.
Yeah.
And it was an organized deal. It wasn't like just on a whim. He's like, I'm going to show these guys how serious I am by burning myself on fire. You know what I mean? It was organized. They pulled up in a car.
Yeah.
They announced it previously that they were going to make a statement out on the street.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, not to verbatimly read from Wikipedia, I mean, the cover features a photo of Thich Quang Duc, a Vietnamese Buddhist monk, burning himself to death in Saigon in 1963. The monk was protesting President Diem's administration for oppressing the Buddhist religion.
There you go.
Photograph drew international attention and persuaded John F. Kennedy to withdraw support for Diem's government. It was taken by Associated Press correspondent Malcolm Brown. A similar photograph earned the award of World Press Photo of the Year in 63.
It's pretty powerful shit, man.
Yeah. The other powerful shit, which was interesting, is, like, I like how the band referred to themselves as not the band, but Guilty Parties.
Right.
Did you notice that?
Yes. Right. Yeah, and another thing was, I didn't realize this at first, because you're kind of an audio... Would you say you're an audiophile?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
Absolutely.
The album is known for its high production values, which are almost of the strictest audiophile standards.
Oh, yeah.
Did you notice that? I don't really have an ear for that.
You know, I will say that comparing listening to the CD with listening to the original CD that I own,
mm-hmm.
there's a huge difference in sound quality.
Really?
Let's go around.
Because, so you're saying like the newly remastered, whatever.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. It is a lot different in sound quality, because you got to figure in 91, 92, they were all using analog equipment to mix and master shit. Now, with the digital age in full swing,
mm-hmm.
you know, they can take that shit and put it through digitally and remaster those files and give them a new take.
Right.
And really give the
sound.
Album a more... It's a more aggressive, more powerful sound than ever before.
And I'm a fan of that.
Yeah.
But... I like that. I think like Beastie Boys re-released,
remastered and re-released everything.
And I like that I believe they give you like the new digitally remastered when you buy it, but you also get like
the disc full of rarities.
Right. And
yeah,
Egypto brought in a couple. He's got a 45, right?
Yeah. So what I brought. Well, I'll first talk about the. I just copped the reissued and remastered version of the box set of the first album.
Right.
So what that includes is the first full disc remastered in good quality.
I'm going to quote you verbatim. A shit ton of shit. It comes with a shit ton of shit.
It comes with a shit ton of shit. Yes, absolutely.
And it's all good shit.
Oh, man, is it good shit.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But let me put it this way. Liner Notes by Chuck D of Public Enemy. That's number one. And Chuck D writing about this band... makes perfect sense.
Right, it does.
You know, Chuck D led one of the... I mean, like, I would say that if Public Enemy was the Rage Against the Machine of the 85 to 89 era.
Right.
Rage Against the Machine is the 90s era Public Enemy. I mean,
right.
And many people will probably disagree with me and say that's a pretty bold statement, but, you know, I think that they made that... They're the only people that not only talk shit and talked politically about... the causes that they were for, But you saw Zach a lot of times on the front line, like especially like if you bought any of the DVDs that had come out, like the first, I believe the DVD that I bought was one that came out shortly after Evil Empire.
Okay.
And it was Zach doing a performance for the Zapatistas in Mexico. Like he actually went to Mexico.
Right.
With the band, and
like they didn't just talk about it, they lived it.
They lived it.
Yeah.
They lived it every single day.
Right.
And I think that's a kick-ass mission statement as a band, because if you're not going to focus or hone in on what you're about ethically and what you're about as a person, mm-hmm. it's kind of no reason to make music.
Right.
I mean, like, yeah, you can make fun pop music, but like even that shit is so watered down. Like, do you really live that shit?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, I don't imagine Britney Spears being a slave every damn day after singing "I'm a Slave for You."
Right.
I'm sorry. Yep. You know, it just doesn't work.
Yep.
And Christina Aguilera being a genie in a bottle? Come on, man. Really? Really? Do you believe
it? Are you telling me she's not?
Dude, yeah, she's not. You just found out about this?
This is bullshit. This is bullshit.
I'm fucking done with music. That's what happens. But no, also, aside from that...
And, Tom Morello at the Wisconsin deal, you know?
He is to me what Jimi Hendrix was to people in the 60s. Like, he is the only guy that I know is unfuckwittable on a guitar.
Yeah. Right.
Like, him... Like, I always said, like, as far as my generation was concerned, him, Dimebag Darrell, may he rest in peace... And who was it? Johnny Greenwood of Radiohead. That's fucking it. Those three to me are the pinnacle of my shit.
Wow.
Like, guitar playing wise, like, nobody fucks with them. Like, as far as me is concerned. But, like, I still agree that Hendrix is one of the most, if not the most badass guitar player in the history of ever.
Wow. You ever get into some Johnny Lang?
Fuck yeah.
All right.
He's actually all right. I actually don't mind lying to me. He actually went to my high school, strangely enough.
Really?
Yeah. Roseville Area High School.
Nice.
Yeah.
You don't go bragging about that.
No, I don't.
Like people who went to school with Josh Hartnett.
You know, some people do, but...
You know those people, because they tell you that.
Yes.
Yeah, I went to school with Josh Hartnett.
Yeah, I saw him.
He was a dick.
Yeah. Kid used to shove me in lockers every day. Fucker. No, I'm just kidding. No, but Johnny Lang, he was pretty quiet, man. He always used to sit in the back and play guitar by himself. And, you know, you can tell when people are driven and are going to be somebody when all they want to do is just, like, focus on their passion.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like what I want to do is, like, I'm kind of at that stage in life right now where, you know, I'm 32 years old. I'm kind of tired of the corporate world as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like this bullshit idea of music being fed to me through the world of iTunes. Like, I still believe in, like, tangible product.
Mm-hmm.
And I still want to purchase it no matter what the fucking cost is. So to me, this box set means everything to me.
Right.
Like, especially, like, the Rage Against the Machine box set. Like, not only does it come with the album and, like, three tracks, which were alternate demo sessions. It also comes with a demo they used to sell for $5 when they were first performing. It also comes with two additional DVDs of their music videos and, like, first performances and stuff like that. Especially has a captivating performance of Killing in the Name Of, which I was, like... I thought the live at the California one that they had done prior to their bowing out and saying peace out.
Right.
Like, that was, like, a hypnotic fucking performance. Mm-hmm. And especially seeing their performance at the DNC and the RNC... You know, in particular, was fucking wild. But, like, that one was... But, like, seeing it when they're so young and they kind of knew, like, it's just eerie.
Yeah.
Like, it's a good eerie. It's mm-hmm. a good eerie to see.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then not only that, you saw it. It came with the vinyl
mm-hmm.
to the album. They're, like, repressed on 180-gram audiophile quality vinyl.
Nice.
So now the other thing that I brought, too, mm-hmm. which I'm sure you'll play later or to close it out, whatever... But in between the first album and Evil Empire, there was if you joined the Rage Against the Machine fan club, you know, you were one of the few who got this apology from the band saying, hey, we're working hard on the new record. Here's something to tie you over.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave you this 45. Now, this 45 is the Evil Empire 7-inch, and it's probably... and it's probably not known for what's on the A side so much as what's known on the B side. Mm-hmm. For those who don't know me, I'm pretty passionate about B sides, and I'm pretty passionate about my vinyl in particular. So if you visit my blog, which is B-Sides and Bullshit, so that's the letter B followed by sides, and then the word A-N-D, then bullshit, .tumblr.com.
.com.
Yes.
Com.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bang. No.
But it's a mouthful.
But if you visit that site and you check it out.
I'll throw up a link with this.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I post up B-sides, or I try to post them up as frequently as possible, or try to present new album streams before they're out. You know, I think I posted up the new the Dilla Donuts that was repressed on vinyl recently. I just bought that box set, which was the box that my brother handed me just now. So, yeah. But what's on the B-side of this is an interesting performance of theirs called, and it was the cover of NWA's Fuck the Police. Now, for those who don't know the history about what happened with Fuck the Police, is they were in the city of Philadelphia, and I think it was during the time when the Circuit Court of Appeals in Philadelphia denied to overturn the verdict for Mumia Abu-Jamal. So they happened to be performing in Philadelphia that specific evening. And the way it begins is just fucking epic, because you know that as soon as it begins, it's just going to give you a chilling, like, message. Like, mm-hmm. Zach De La Roca is like, we want to send a friendly message to the Fraternal Order of Police in Philadelphia. And then all of a sudden, they bust into that fucking cover of Fuck the Police, and it is awesome.
So is this a live version?
It is a live version. So from what it says on the 45, it says it was recorded live in Washington, D.C. at the benefit concert for Mumia Abu-Jamal, August 13th, 1995.
So, and that was free for the fan club members?
For the fan club members.
You know what? That's another dying thing, is the fan club thing. I mean, there's fan clubs still.
Well, they exist in a digital format, but
exactly.
they're not as, like, friendly or as, like, personable.
Yeah.
As they once were.
Right.
Like, when you joined a record, if you joined a band's fan club, you joined a band's fan club, meaning
right.
that you got some shit before anybody
you
else got their hands. Yeah.
Represent that shit.
You represent that
yeah.
shit. You know.
You'd be walking the streets, be like, hey, you got that Rage Against the Machine, Evil Empire 45 with Fuck the Police? What? You've never heard of it? What? Well, guess what? I'm part of the fan club. They sent me that shit for free.
You know, and that's the best shit. I'm so much a vinyl fiend to the point that, like, since, you know, I even though I run a label and we do, like, limited pressings, which is, I think, how we got by most of the time. There's still not a day goes by where I'm like, God damn, I just want to do some vinyl. I really want to press up some vinyl
right.
for the fans.
And for those that don't know, I do some graphic design on the side. I have put out there on Facebook, it was a while ago, that if anybody, any artists out there want to press something on vinyl, I would do the album cover for free, because I would love to have that tangible, you know, full-sized album artwork. It's just beautiful. Album artwork is a dying thing, too, unfortunately,
oh, yeah.
with the digital
oh, yeah.
age.
Absolutely.
I love the convenience of digital, because I don't like to go out in public. I don't
you know,
like to leave my house, really.
You know, the only people I feel like who really appreciate vinyl as a living art form as a hip-hop label in Twin Cities is Rhymesayers.
Right.
Oh, Rhymesayers
yeah.
still appreciates the
Absolutely.
Living shit out of making a fucking good record that you can get your hands on
mm-hmm.
and that you want.
Yeah, and unfortunately, vinyl costs so damn much to make.
It does, but you know what? You know what the interesting thing is? On NPR recently, they just presented a story that vinyl sales are on the uptick.
They are, yep.
They
yeah,
went
up
17.7% from 3.8 million units to, I think, about 4.9 million units. So that's pretty huge
yeah.
that people, I mean, I think there's slowly becoming a collective psychology that I hate being impersonal on iTunes. Like, fuck this shit. Let me go to my local record store and see what's up.
Right.
You know, and that's what I support. I support, like, going to the Fetus, going to Treehouse, going to Fifth Element, going to Jaime's Basement, going to Urban Lights in St. Paul, which is, like, one of my, like, Tim Wilson, one of the best guys ever. He is He is a great, great man, and what he's done for the Twin Cities music legacy in introducing major artists to just a small, dingy market in Minneapolis is unmatched, in my view. Nicest guy in the world, right. And you can probably, you will, if you step into his store, mm-hmm. you will get lost in just the sheer amount of posters on the wall.
Right.
He still has promo posters from like 89, 90 that are still hanging up there. Like you'll fucking see a poster for Wu-Tang's Enter the 36 Chambers still up there.
Right.
And same thing with Raekwon's Only Built for Cuban Links. And like I saw the poster for De La Soul's Stakes Is High, and like even like, you know, Eazy-E's 5150 Home for the Sick.
Right.
I saw like posters from Mariah Carey, like everything in like urban pop to hip hop music. That poster, he has it all up there.
Mm-hmm.
He even has like a case where he has like autographed photos by LL Cool J, Outkast,
people that have stopped by.
People that have stopped by. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, that's cool. I did hear a story from him, and I did corroborate it from Tim Wilson. So, I mean, I'm sure what, you know, Slug, if you're out there, you'll probably verify this or whatnot. But
Slug, let's get you on the show too. Slug.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. If I'm not mistaken, he had Outkast right when they released Southern Playlist to Cadillac Music or AT Aliens.
Yeah.
And who came to do like a freestyle but Atmosphere?
Really?
I didn't know this. And Tim told me about it. And I was just like, yo, dude, I pretty much just like, I'm like, man, I'm done. I can't win.
Yeah.
I can't win at life no more.
So that was early mid-90s?
Yeah.
So this was early, because early that was Atmosphere.
That's
too,
right then. When Rhymesayers started, was right. Around 95, 96.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. Anywho, but yeah, back to the Rage Against the Machine album. What are I mean, like, not to steer the discussion, but what are some of your favorite cuts on there in particular?
Killing in the Name, of course. Bomb Track. Bullet in the Head. It's hard to say.
Yo. In the first Matrix movie, Wake Up was playing at the end of the credits.
At the end, the very, very end.
The very end.
I don't know if I sat through that.
Yeah. It's pretty dope, man. I was like, yo, this is the shit.
You know, I say the pinnacle, the point that I really, really got into Rage, remember the movie Higher Learning? Great movie, by the way.
Absolutely. And if I'm not mistaken, that contained the cut Year of the Boomerang,
yes,
which was from Evil Empire.
And again, that's again where my hip-hop world and this rock world came together, was with that soundtrack. Because that had...
There was Ice Cube on there with Higher Learning.
Yep.
Outkast had a song on there called... Outkast had a song on there called Phobia. It wasn't Warren G, but Warren G did produce a song on there for Mr. Grimm.
Right.
Called Things Are Looking Grim or Situation Grim,
Situation
so to speak,
Grim, yeah.
Which I own the 12-inch for.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
How about yourself, though? What's your standout track on here?
My standout track is still Wake Up. Like, I fucking love that shit. I also like Settle for Nothing, which a lot of people don't like sometimes, but I think Settle for Nothing is great because it has that slow build to it, like where he's just kind of like... You know, hatred passed on and passed. And then all of a sudden he gets progressively louder. And then at the end he's like, I've got a nine, a set, a sight. And now I got a name. Dude, it was like, and Tom Morello comes in with that fucking guitar and just fuck shit up. It's great.
Yeah.
It's fucking great. It's just awesome. And I still do love Bullet in the Head. I also really like I really like Bomb Track.
Well, I think we could talk all day about Rage.
Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah.
But so as it stands right now, they are back together, but they're not recording anything, but they're performing,
they're
popping up once in a while.
There have been rumors that they've been recording shit, but they'll appear every now and then just to appear now and then.
Right.
But from what I'm aware of, there isn't any internal conflict between the band members or anything of that nature. Tom Morello still does his shit as the Night Watchman.
Mm-hmm.
It's unknown as to whether Zach will put anything out solo.
Have you ever heard the One Day as a Lion?
Yeah, that was the fucking
five
shit.
Track.
It was all right. It wasn't too bad with that dude from the Mars Volta, the drummer from the Mars Volta, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good. It was a little different feel without that element of the Tom Morello guitar, you know what I mean? But the power of Zach De La Rocha's voice was still there. His message was still there.
Yeah.
And there was, I think, a couple of songs had some keys, like some organ or something that was just, the music is really good. It's just not, it's not Rage. That's not what he was going for.
Well, I think, like, you know, that's the issue with fans' perception also. It's like they're expecting, like, they got to, I'm surprised that fans still haven't woken up to the realization that an artist could never be as good as their first album ever was. Like,
Regardless, if they say, this album, we're going back.
Exactly. Like, I love Nas's Life is Good. It's no O-matic, but I love Life is Good. I mean, that doesn't change the fact that I still love the album and still enjoy it and still bang it. Like, you know, everybody has, and that's what pisses me off, man, is like people have shitted on Nas so goddamn much, like, for not making something like Illmatic. And people got to realize that, you know how old Nas was when he made Illmatic? He was only 17.
I was going to guess 16.
You know, so he was only 17. Like, you got to realize, like, for someone like that who's living in Queensbridge and seeing this everyday life and the projects and stuff like that, you know, once you've made your first album and you're getting label bread, you know, you kind of can't rap about that life anymore. You could still tell tales about it, but it just won't be, it won't carry the same fervor.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
As like, because after the first album, you know, if you're getting that Sony money, I imagine you're not going to be living in the projects.
Unless you're The Game.
Well,
maybe that's what The Game's going for.
That's what he says. Yeah.
That's what he says.
Yeah. Now, if you look at Pitchfork Media, if you're interested. Now, are you familiar with Nardwar, or have you heard of Nardwar?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I am
great.
Familiar with Nardwar.
So,
because of Johnny Question Mark.
So if you see motherfucking the interview with Kendrick Lamar, Nardwar takes out a handbill of LA's hottest sightseeing tour where he takes him on the hood tour.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, goes down Slauson. Goes down Slauson and Figueroa and a whole gang of other shit. And apparently The Game's stepfather is involved with that. Pitchfork just recently did a 25-minute documentary on Game's stepfather and the tour itself. Like, he's taking people from Australia on this hood tour. It's really, really eye-opening. Like, I thought I
would do that. Absolutely.
I thought the shit was a joke at first, and then I was like, no, this ain't no joke. He's really taking them through the hood.
Really?
Or
as a white man from East Bethel, Minnesota, which is
heavily tatted on the arms, as I must say, I'm witness.
You know, growing up listening to NWA and like not having any fucking clue what the hell they're talking about, but you know, just the stories and everything within the songs. It's I am a target for such a tour. You know, like I would absolutely do that if I were to find myself in LA. At some point, and
yeah,
I would do that.
And the hilarious part is, he has a booth on Sunset Boulevard, right on the Walk of Fame. Like, people just go up and be like, you know, when's your next hood tour? And like, here's the time. And he has a dude that passes out handbills up and down Sunset Ave.
Nice, that's cool.
It's fucking crazy.
Well, let's. What do you say we break here for a little Pearson Salted Nut Roll?
Oh shit, you brought it for real?
I did.
Oh snap. Snaps.
It's time to not be a butthole.
Snaps on the Petro.
Yes.
As they would say in Menace to Society.
Yes.
Oh damn.
You got snaps. Are you a fan?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He's already halfway done with it.
Oh damn.
At your local Mills Fleet Farm.
Aha. Uh-huh.
They actually have the fun size ones.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And if I were a trick or treater, you know, trick or treating, mm-hmm. which at the age of 34 I would not be above doing. If I knew that a house had Pearson Salted Nut Rolls fun size, I would dress up and trick or treat.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Now here's the question: what would you dress up as?
Ooh, good question. Tough one. If I were to draw inspiration from my 5-year-old son, who recently said he wanted to go as Psy, of Gangnam Style. Sorry. What, you know, it's so funny because these, you know, kids are like, I want to be that for Halloween. And now he just said this like a month ago. Uh-huh. We got 10 months to go till Halloween.
Yeah.
And just the other day he said he wanted to be a ninja. So it's going to change.
That's a badass costume right there.
Yeah, Sai or a ninja?
Ninja, of
how
course.
How about a ninja Sai?
No, that don't make no sense right there.
Now, the last time, last episode I had Big Jess on, we were talking about a very sarcastic list of things that are cool. So I just wanted to break these down for you. Maybe he has some additional things to put on.
I'm sure I will.
Currently, the list has smoking is really cool.
It's
all
right.
Really cool. All right.
Okay. I mean, I'm smoking now. I can't complain.
Tattoos, really cool.
Tattoos are cool. I can't get tattoos on myself because I have the Mediterranean hair, and that's a great deal of issue for me.
Right. Bath salts are really cool.
Hey, if ASAP Rocky could sing about bath salts, they must be really cool.
A Trans Am or Firebird?
Are we talking 60s Trans Am Firebirds?
Sure.
Yeah.
That covers pretty much any range.
There we go.
Pagers.
Oh, dude. Cool. I had a pager back in 96. Yes. I remember very well.
iPhones, iPads, pretty much anything Apple. Very cool.
Yeah. Although I will say some of the Android devices have recently impressed me. I saw the Nexus 7. And, you know, got a chance to see a preview of that, and it's a really pretty snappy phone. I'm surprised.
So might want to add Androids on there.
Google doesn't step their game up. Yeah. I can't be mad.
Pimped out vans.
Oh, dude, yeah. They got to be on 100 spoke Daytons. They got to have the shag carpeting.
Yep.
They got to have the home theater system in there. You know, that is clutch for any road trip, you know. Probably a CD of anything from the Creedence Clearwater Revival.
That is a topic to be discussed either in the next episode or the following episode.
Ha-ha! See?
CCR.
Bringing it up early.
Piercings.
Again, I can't get with that because I have the body hair, but I don't get mad at females who do that.
Right.
That's great.
What about the males?
Males, hey, you know, if you got one in the lip or nose, I ain't mad at you. If you're trying to get a cock ring, though, I kind of will question your motives, but I'll be all right.
Right. Pearson salted nut rolls, of course.
Of course, it's got to, if that ain't on the list.
Air Jordans.
Oh man, see, I will admit, sadly, I am not a Nike head, and I do not wear chains that excite the feds, as my friend Nas would say. I am more an Adidas head.
I am as well.
I love the shell toes.
Another thing, not rims, but dubs.
Oh man, yeah, of course the Dayton dubs. Those are where it's at.
Lowriders.
Fuck yeah.
And you can relate to this. Beats.
Oh yeah,
Beats. That was Jess's addition to that.
I can't be mad at Beats.
Things that are not cool.
Oh,
meth.
Of course.
What the fuck are you thinking, kids?
Hey, you know. Have you seen like what happens to people on meth, and what happens is they'll take an actual photo of a meth head before he started meth or she started meth, and then take a picture of them after.
Yeah.
Or like if they're in the rehabilitation process, you'd swear the transition was night and fucking day. Like that is no joke of a
right.
drug.
It's not.
I mean, thankfully, I will credit it to myself that I've never done any drugs whatsoever, so, I mean, that's kind of how I like to keep it. I kind of like to keep my circle cool. Hookah's probably the worst thing I do, or shisha.
Right.
You know, that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Which isn't that bad.
Yeah, it's not that bad.
You're still alive, so that's good.
Hey.
And you still have all your teeth,
hey.
From what I can tell.
Right?
Speaking of kind of being straight edge, did you know that Zach De La Roca is also straight edge, besides smoking? He took up smoking.
Also the drummer of one of my favorite hardcore bands to come out of the West Coast right now, Trash Talk. Their drummer was straight edge for a long time. You know, that was pretty interesting. And really, there's nothing wrong with being straight edge.
I mean,
you can still partake in a show. You could still... You just, if you go, you may have a casual drink, but you won't get shit-faced.
Right.
If you go to a cigar bar...
I figured straight edge meant not even touching anything.
I don't know
the exact definition.
I would consider that to be straight edge too. No, I would agree that is the definition. But I think at the same time, I mean, like, I would say that I pretty much walk that fine line of being straight edge. You know, so
you know, I got something else to add to the list of things that are cool.
Yes,
wearing sunglasses at night.
Ah, yes, so you could spy on your girlfriend at night.
Yes,
yes, as the Fugees so famously quipped.
Yes. Do you have anything you could add to the list?
As of recent vinyl reissues, those are the fucking shit.
Or vinyl in general.
Vinyl needs to be on there. Vinyl needs to be on there. Yes. I'm surprised that vinyl isn't. and it saddens me.
This is just the early beginnings of this list. This list is going to be infinite.
Oh, yeah. I will say I'm not into it as of now, but I will say this is making a comeback, and I'm actually going to purchase them. Multiple fingered rings.
Oh, nice.
You know how people used to rock the two-finger or four-finger rings?
Yep.
Mike McClan famously rocks the Doom and the Tree four-finger rings. Those are great.
How about gold teeth?
Gold teeth.
And I'm not talking grills. I'm talking like
actual gold
Slick
teeth.
Rick.
That's plausible. As long as you don't ice them up and then fuck your teeth up, like Baby, where he decided to get a diamond stud installed into each and every tooth. That's asking for it.
Big mistake.
I don't want to be there for that root canal. That's not my kind of party.
Right.
Let's put it that way.
We got Egypto Knuckles.
Black Kyle.
Background Noise Crew.
BackgroundNoiseCrew.com.
Now, if you haven't gotten the impression of Egypto Knuckles yet, this guy knows pretty much every fucking person in the local scene. It doesn't even have to be local. It's like...
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. Now, you used to run at the U of M the Beatbox
show. Yes, I did.
Tell us about it.
So, when I started with Radio K back in 1999, if I'm not mistaken, it was October of 1999, I volunteered with Radio K and proceeded to produce and then shortly thereafter host the Beatbox on Radio K, meaning that I got to review the songs that got picked for rotation as far as hip-hop went. I also contacted labels to try to get the newest and greatest. I also contacted local artists to have them come in and talk about the shows that they had and things of that nature. And I think when I took the helm of the show, it seemed like a lot of interesting things were happening to the scene in particular. Like, I remember when Crescent Moon was part of Odd Jobs. Obviously, Odd Jobs no longer exists, and it's Guild of Vultures now. Remember when POS was part of a group called Ceno Species. You know, Ceno Species is now defunct, and POS now rolls with Doomtree and is doing amazingly well. I'm very happy for him.
Mm-hmm.
Not doing so well health-wise, so I'm praying for his speedy recovery, and I'm also praying that he gets his transplant. Been wanting to donate to his campaign, and I just have not had the time or opportunity to do so, and I feel kind of terrible about it. I do. And
You are a terrible person.
I am, kind of. I am. It kind of worries me sometimes.
Not me.
Okay.
That's calming.
But I did the show for 7 years and got introduced to a lot of good folks from there, like Toki Wright when he was part of the core. I got introduced to like Bonafide. I got introduced to you guys, the Lunatics Camp. You know, shouts out to you guys. I remember.
Rest in peace, Lunatics.
Yeah, R.I.P. Professor Fresh with the Bow Wow Ripped and Glistening freestyle line.
Yes.
I do remember that.
Yes.
I still have that on audio, hilariously enough, which we may have to rehash for a future.
Right.
Thank you, Rob Podcast. What else? And then I got the chance to interview some of my greatest influences. Like, I got to interview DJ Revolution of the famous Wake Up Show on the West Coast. Got to interview Dead Prez. Got to interview Ad Rock of the Beastie Boys. I got to interview, who else did I interview? I interviewed Talib Kweli. Really nice guy. It was a really great time.
Right.
I'd say those 7 years really provided me with the, like, you know, for those that don't know me personally, I underwent like a really rough battle with my parents because in our culture, in Arab culture in general, they were like, you know, you got to be a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer. Or the worst part is you go into business.
The worst part?
Yeah, that was the worst part is you run your own business.
Right.
I didn't want to go either of those tracks. I had said that I was really interested in radio. I was really interested in music. Music is my passion. I want to do radio, so I want to major in media communications. And they were like, you won't make a lot of money. You probably won't get the recognition you deserve, things of that nature. You know, I got it from all angles, and they almost threatened to pull me out of school, to be honest, and have me just work at home and kind of have... Or else go to a technical school and focus on the technical trade.
Right.
And I was like, no, I really want to undergo this and have my chance. And thankfully, you know, my dad understood and he let me go through with it and graduated in 4 years' time. Did Radio K for 7 years, seven wonderful years, won 3 to 4 City Pages awards, if I recollect correctly, from it. So, I mean, to say that it wasn't a great experience would be lying to myself. Mm-hmm. I would say it was probably one of the experiences that shaped me as a human being that I am today.
Cool.
Without a doubt.
Very cool.
So, you know.
And that was all volunteered.
That was all volunteer, yeah.
Is that show still around?
It is not. It is sadly. It is also RIP.
And Radio K is...
No, Radio K is still around.
It is, okay. Okay.
Radio K is still around. They're still doing very well. I still keep in contact with most of the folks there, and they've been nothing but nice. They're pretty cool folks, so, you know, I wish them well, so.
Maybe you should propose the idea of bringing the beatbox back.
If I had to count how many people I've been approached by to bring the beatbox back, I think I would lose count on both my hands. It is
what
literally...
What about all of your feet?
Those two.
All three of them?
All three of them. And my infamous third boob, which I will not talk about.
Okay,
on
understood. It. Understood.
You know, if you want to see Total Recall, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying.
Yes. I remember when we as lunatics, we were on the show.
Yes.
And
yes.
I remember, I started Lunatics. I never really wanted to rap, you know what I mean? I mean, I did, but I didn't, you know? It was more like I just kind of fell into it.
Yeah.
And I've never been a good freestyler at all, by any means. And I was really nervous to come on the show because it was like, I knew there was a portion where you freestyled. And, of course, everyone else knows. I think it was Rents and...
No,
actually, it was PLC and Ruthless.
It was
we were
just
all there.
It was just PLC and, if I remember correctly, it was PLC that was there and Professor Fresh was there.
Okay.
But the rest of Ruthless could not attend, if I wasn't mistaken.
All right. And I just remember that going around, and I was very nervous because I did not want to freestyle. And I did not freestyle. And I will not freestyle right
Dodged
now.
Dodged a bullet there.
Yeah, I sure did.
Giggity.
It could have wrecked the reputation of...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because you know what? To be... And I never claimed to be like a killer MC, you know what I mean? But that's definitely a tool you need to have in your arsenal to do so.
But we talking about practice.
Right.
Yes.
So I dodged a bullet there.
Yes, you did.
So after the beatbox, you what happened?
So after the beatbox was over, I gracefully bowed out in 2006 to allow it to be a student-run station, and I kind of let Franz Diego and those folks take it over, and Franz has done me proud, and I can't be mad. I'm nothing but grateful for Franz for taking that opportunity by the horns and really making it something, so... I'm forever appreciative to Franz. And me and Franz are still good friends to this day. He's a really good dude, very awesome guy. But after that...
He has an impeccable taste of style clothing.
Dude, he is pretty much fucking awesome in my book. Yeah. He is really good.
I like his look. It's a look I could not pull off.
Like, his new video just came out today for Spend. Did you see that shit?
I did not.
It is great.
Yeah.
Really good message. And it's a fucking great video altogether. It was filmed by Kale Eichhoff, if I'm not mistaken,
okay,
who also directed Wagon on the Scene, and he really does a fucking awesome job. You need to check out Kale's work if you can. He really does awesome jobs with videos. Like, he's really dope.
Yeah.
Yeah. But after that, I then started venturing around DU Nation, and kind
of
like...
And for those unaware, DU Nation was it started off as an actual website.
It did.
But
it was an actual website.
It was, yeah, I'm sorry. It was a website. but more the forum, the chat area of the website became
the bulletin board.
The bulletin board became like this just hub of just anybody who's anybody who wanted to be anything in the local scene was like, you had to be on DU Nation.
Well, it was pretty much like when you look back at the local scene in large, like, we used to have times where you couldn't find anything to do hip-hop-wise on a night. And suddenly now, like, it's great now because you can find everything to do on a hip-hop night now. Because every night there's, like, somebody hip-hop doing something.
Right.
And that's great. I really enjoy that. Like, one thing I'm not terribly saddened about, but I am kind of bummed out about it, but The Best Love is Free, which is the fourth... The fourth in a series of compilations released by the band Culture Cry Wolf, and specifically Botsy of Culture Cry Wolf. He's a super homie. I just met him yesterday, or not yesterday, but I met him on Friday at the Big Jess show, and and I introduced myself to him, and he was like, "Yo, man, it's really super to meet you, dude. I've heard so much good about you. Like, you're really nice." And
did you tell him it's all true? It's all true.
I couldn't say that.
Okay. Yeah.
That would not be the good person in me.
I would say that, but very sarcastically.
Yeah, sometimes. Anywho, he's got The Best Love Is Free going down this Saturday with Sophia Aris, Cecil Otter, Later Babes, and I, Colossus, which is going to be a really dope show at the Fine Line. I really wanted to catch that show, but it's okay. I mean, Common Labor's got their own thing going, and I'm super happy for those guys. I mean, like, I really feel like we in our five-year history have an album that we can say we're proud of. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think the guys who did the album, Anna Lyrical and Fingers, are really stellar talents in their own right on BNC. Mm-hmm. And I'm just still floored by the album. I still remember when they had... when they were first creating the tunes for it in a 48-hour recording session, they didn't create all the tunes in a 48-hour record session. I just want to clear that up because there have been some reviews that have popped up recently where they have said, like, this record was a result of a 48-hour marathon recording jam, and that's not true. The initial structure or Common Labor itself was created in 48 hours, and so were two songs for it created. The first song being Here For You Too, Dreamer of Dreams, which was their dedication to Idea, which they shortly recorded after Idea's funeral. Mm-hmm. And they both attended Idea's funeral, and I did not get a chance to because I had to pull overtime that day. Yeah, I mean, like, hearing those initial sketches and then to hearing the full length now, it's a product that I'm very proud of. I can't wait for folks to hear the album. I mean, if you go up on B as in Boy, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie, music.bandcamp.com, you can check out the record in its entirety, streaming right now live. The other thing that I pride myself on is the fact that all our releases are available for free. A good majority of them are available for free, except our newest releases, which are Everybody Does This Volume 2 and the Common Labor record. But other than that, everything else is available for free. All we ask for is your email address to keep you in the loop on shit and stuff like that. Well, so,
when I signed up, I actually gave you my social security number and my mother's maiden name.
Oh, no, that was someone from Nigeria. I'm sorry, man. You got
it. Is that what it was?
Yeah, sorry.
It was some prince that said I was supposed to give him that info to get money?
No.
No, okay. No.
You didn't give him any money, did you?
Well, they said I just needed to wire them some money. It was only like... couple grand, but
fuck.
I'm supposed to be a fucking millionaire in a couple weeks.
Well, we'll talk about that on the next podcast.
Okay, I'll let you know how that goes. Now, according to the Background Noise Crew website, you're listed as the treasurer. Does that mean that you handle the booty?
I handle the money. Yes.
Okay.
I am basically the guy who handles the funds. Yes, absolutely. Okay.
So, are you the head of the label?
Yes.
Or do you consider it a label?
Yes, I am. Okay. I mean, I would say it's part collective, part label.
Right.
It operates as a label in many facets, just because we're that organized about it and that dedicated about it. I mean, it's very much the independent-as-fuck aesthetic that LP once told. So I would say it is a label, but I would say it's more so like... you remember like punk labels like Fat Wreck Chords or stuff like that, or Suicidal Tendencies Records or things of that nature, mm-hmm. like, or SST, so to speak, like the great punk labels of yore. Like, I really like those labels and the real do-it-yourself aesthetic that they had. So mm-hmm. I would say
Lunatics.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm absolutely. Just kidding. Come on.
Yes, absolutely. I still play Strawberry Out. Don't fuck around.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah, I still have it. Surprisingly enough, I saw it at a Half Price Book used, and you'll be surprised to know how much it was selling for.
$20.
Actually, it was.
No, what?
I swear to God.
who would pay $20 for that?
I don't know, but they apparently put it up there for $20, and there was also another copy I saw for $9.95.
Huh. So somebody was like, I think this one's worth $20. This one's worth $10.
Exactly. Hey.
Near mint condition.
The people who peruse those used records cannot be wrong, right?
Right. Very, very true.
Hey.
Very true.
Hey, that's your stock right there. It's going up. I like it.
So what's the Common Labor's coming out.
Yes.
I had Fingers on it, or I'm not Fingers. Fingers is going to be on the show in a couple weeks.
Yes.
I had Anna Lyrical on a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
He gave me a copy of the album.
What do you think?
Very good. Very good. I like it. How do you describe it? How would you describe it?
I would say it's the hip-hop version of Mumford & Sons.
Okay, being that I don't listen to Mumford & Sons.
I will say it's the hip-hop version of Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Okay. Blood, Sweat, and Tears?
The band Blood, Sweat, and Tears from the 70s, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. They're a pretty dope band. Yeah. But no, I mean, what's great about the way it's broken down as far as producers, like, for those that don't know, I'm one of the in-house producers of Background Noise. Fingers is the other half of the Background Noise producer stable. Tone Crusher said it best. Fingers operates as like the hybrid engine where he's always experimenting and using different instrumentation and really playing it out himself. I'm more like the clunkety gas engine that'll still get you to work point A to point B and won't break down on you. So I make a lot of my influence is rooted in like the 90s era boom bap shit. Like real East Coast influence, or like sometimes, you know, West Coast influence sometimes.
So what are you making beats with these days?
Right now, I used to have Fruity Loops. I dumped that setup a while back, and now I'm rocking a Machine Micro along with Complete 8, and I'm still rocking SoundForge to chop my samples up.
No, Machine, right? Is that what it's called?
Yes, Machine. Okay. It's a Native Instruments, a new tool. It's like a MIDI controller / live instrumentation all in one.
Okay.
And it's like a small little like controller pad that you can basically like arrange chops on, and you can play different chops on, and you can arrange drums in there. It really does it all. So it's pretty cool.
How many beats are you making, like, let's say a week? This is a daily thing?
You know, it depends upon my mood sometimes. I know that like really like tomorrow, like I'm making like a gang of beats, like, because I just came across some shit that I had to sample that I couldn't like fend off anymore.
Yeah.
But like I usually take my time because of the fact that I really like to figure out a sample before I actually attack it, so to speak. Like how I'm gonna attack the groove, how I'm gonna make it feel out and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say like originally with FL Studio, like I was making a shit ton of beats a day. I think I got up to 476 beats at one time.
Wow.
In my 3 years of using Fruity Loops.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say now I'm probably at about like 119 with this new one.
Wow.
So it's a really intuitive machine. It's a really intuitive machine, no pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a really awesome piece of software. I really like it.
Do you have a Bandcamp or someplace you can check out your beats?
For those that want to hear my beats, soundcloud.com/EgyptoKnuckles. A lot of my new stuff can be found there. I've posted up one where I made it with like all original instrumentation.
Mm.
It's a new beat that I made called Concert Hall. I'm really proud of it because I don't know a bit of notation and I don't know how to play instruments. So largely most of what I do is by ear. So like if I'm playing stuff out on a keyboard or a MIDI controller keyboard, it's just literally me playing it out and feeling out the notation, mm-hmm. and then kind of going from there and figuring out a chord progression.
Right.
You know? So it takes me twice as long as it takes someone like Twinkie Jiggles of High Respects to actually come up with an original.
Great name, by the way.
Oh, yeah. He's the homie.
You can come up with something better than Egypto Knuckles? Jesus.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
I know.
That's a good name.
I know, like, right? Like, I know, right?
Totally.
Like, full on.
So you sell beats too, right?
To be honest, and I will be frankly honest.
Please,
don't lie
to me.
I don't sell beats.
You don't sell them.
The reason why I don't sell them is I don't feel I'm at that point yet. I really don't feel I'm at that point yet to be selling beats.
But what if someone?
If someone made me an offer, I'm not going to refuse them.
Right. What if they made you an offer you can't refuse?
Then that's fine. Yes. I can't be mad at it. But for the most part, I usually think that I'm still of the science that a record is part production, part MC.
Right.
So it requires a really great MC to know where they're going to take your song,
mm-hmm.
or to take their record, you know, for you to make it. So for me, I really feel like it's more so a cross collaboration of things.
Right. When it comes to Egypto Knuckles,
yes,
the beats are to be told, not to be sold.
Yes.
Yes.
And so is the game.
Well, not game, the game.
The game.
So what's next for Background Noise Crew? The Common Labor album?
We got the Common Labor album. Hopefully Zombie Zombie will be dropping their 1920 80s mixtape. Or as they say, 19,000. Or as they say, actually, I fucked up on the title now. My bad. It's actually 2019 80s or 2019 80, as they collectively dub it. It's basically them rapping over 80 samples.
Nice. It is, I love 80s pop.
They actually busted out this song called "Sweet Dreams of Double Fistin'," where they take "Sweet Dreams of Are Made of These" by the Eurythmics and actually do a song called "Double Fistin'" over it, and it sounds fucking awesome.
Cool. So who does the beats for them then?
They largely do it themselves, to be honest.
And who is Zombie Zombie?
Zombie Zombie is Legend Has It and J.L. McGee.
Okay, another McGee.
Yes, that's another right. McGee.
Yeah. Although I think his is M-A-G.
M-A-G-E.
Right.
Yeah, okay. We had to be careful of the M-C-G because we didn't want to get sued.
No. I would love to branch out the family, you know what I mean? Maybe he didn't want to be affiliated with me.
Oh.
Maybe that's what it was.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I don't want to be fucking guy.
I know that's right.
Well, okay, so now who is on BNC?
So BNC is made up of myself, Egypto Knuckles, TQD, a.k.a. The Quiet Dude,
right.
Fingers, Analyrical, Status Reign, J.L. McGee, Legend Has It.
Nice.
And those are the members.
So is the Zombie Zombie album going to be another pressed release? And
it'll be a mixtape release, yes. Okay. So we will press up something for it, hopefully. Probably just burn it in CDRs and put it in sleeves and just give it out to folks.
All right.
Be dope.
Don't knock the hustle.
No. Can't knock the hustle.
No.
Jay-Z said it. No. He said you can't knock the hustle.
Right.
Who am I to knock one's hustle?
He also raises the whole hood like you got oil under it.
Yes, he does.
He does. So just remember that.
Yes, he does.
He also raises Beyonce's legs over his shoulders.
He probably smashed that numerous times after the Super Bowl. I wouldn't be surprised. Yes. There was a tweet I saw recently where people said after the performance, Jay-Z smacked Beyonce on the ass so hard that the lights actually went out. In the
room. Oh, shit.
So I will say that was the capital tweet of the night.
Nice.
There was also the tweet that I had sent that I said, what was it? I said something to the effect of powers out and put the hashtag thank you based God.
Okay. There's one thing I got a correction from the last episode.
Yes.
A friend of mine, he used to rap. His name's Big, he used to go by Big Slack. He's from Oklahoma.
Yes.
Was he
LC Slack from the Lunatic Sports?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't remember. I don't know if I knew him back
there
then.
There was an LC Slack on the Lunatic. They used to frequent the Lunatic's message board.
Okay. Maybe it was. I don't know. But either way, he listened to the last episode and he corrected me because at one point I said, Color Me Bad. I referenced Color Me Bad, saying they're from Canada.
Whoops.
Yeah, they're not. They're from Oklahoma. So just like if someone was like, yeah, Prince, he's from Florida, you know? We'd be like, fuck, no, wait a minute.
Oh, yeah, we're quick to claim that shit.
Yeah. Not that, I mean, people, if you know Prince, you know he's from Minneapolis. But
for shizzle.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I just had to point out that correction, you know? I just can't go barking shit if I don't know anything about it. Yeah, just don't. Hold your tongue.
Yes.
Look,
I'm holding it. But how am I still talking?
Interesting.
Oh.
So give us some plugs here. Where can we check out Background Noise Crew?
BackgroundNoiseCrew.com, BNCMusic.Bandcamp.com. We're all there.
What about Twitter?
Twitter.com/BNCrew.
Boom.
Blow.
And then what's your address for yours? Your blog?
You can check out my blog at B-Sides and Bullshit, all spelled out one word, .tumblr.com. You can also check out my SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/EgyptoKnuckles. If you want to like me on Facebook, it's facebook.com/EgyptoKnucklesMusic. And in addition, I also have a Vimeo account, which hopefully, if I get the artistry in me, I will post some shit soon that'll be directed by dope folks at vimeo.com/EgyptoKnuckles.
Boom.
Blow, in your face.
Boom goes the dynamite.
And boom goes the dynamite.
Well, this is, I got to say, thanks for coming on the show here.
Totally.
This
totally.
Is great, man.
Thank you for having me.
And here I am. I find myself
Thank
back.
You, Rob.
Yes. Oh, nice.
Look at the clever wordplay we put on here.
I find myself here back at Yaffa again. This is a great spot. If you live in the Twin Cities, come check out Yaffa. And this is Columbia Heights?
Yes, this is.
Yeah, it's a great hookah bar and restaurant.
Yes.
Come get your hookah on. You don't need a hookah. You rent one,
yes.
Essentially.
Yes.
And they have many a flavor of shisha.
I recommend the apple mint. It is delish.
I think that's what I'm smoking. I think I asked for double apple, and
yes.
I think he gave me the apple mint.
Ta-da!
Which, it's a very cleansing feeling.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Clears the congestion
I'll
right
I'll come
out.
Home and wake up my wife and be like, hey, I'm home. You know, breathe in her face. Hey, I'm home. And she won't say, you know, what the fuck were you doing?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But I'll have that nice minty aftertaste.
Yes, yes.
But anyways, thanks for coming on the show, man. Appreciate
hey, man.
It. It's good to see you again.
Thank you, Rob. Oh!
Again.
So nice it had
and
to be said
don't
twice.
Stop.
Yes.
Thankyourob.com. Go there. It's a little hub. Check out some of my other stuff, my T-shirts. I make a couple T-shirts there. The Some People's Kid podcast.
Yep.
Some People's Kids, which we're way behind on episodes. There's only like four.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Some People's Kids, huh?
Yeah.
What's that about?
Are you asking or are you saying?
I'm really asking,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. Some People's Kids is me and my buddy Chuck. It's basically we talk about music, movies, TV, and just bullshit the whole time.
Ha-ha!
You know what? My buddy Chuck is like you, except for his knowledge of music is not as vast as you. His knowledge... If you were to take your music knowledge and put it into movies and TV, he's got it.
Yeah.
Pretty
much like Joe, Big Joe. Shouts out to Big Joe.
Right, yeah. Big Joe sent me a text the other day, and he threw in an Elf reference.
He did.
And I got it.
He did. I totally
Gordon agree. Shumway?
Oh, yeah, I remember Gordon Shumway.
Shumway?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I remember that.
Yeah, we got the Some People's Kid podcast. We gotta do some episodes there. Otherwise, my iDefine Design, graphic design, check it out.
Yes, sir.
I got another website called batmananswers.com. I haven't done anything with it yet, but it's there.
Does that mean there are going to be a bunch of Batman memes where he backhands Robin?
It might end up being that. I was going to
The
original thought was it was going to be like, I have this Batman mask, actually is Big Joe's mask that I had for like a year. And I was going to just answer people's questions, you know, people that ask questions.
Yes, yes.
I'm not wearing hockey pads like that.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, yes.
But anyways, thankyourob.com. Check it out. Check out the past episodes of the show here.
Yes.
And check out this episode here that you're listening to and you're ending right now.
Wu-Tang for the kiddies.